I mean, Lord, I need thee. Lord, I need thee. I mean, sometimes it's the simplest prayers that are the most profound. If you have your Bibles, go ahead and open up with me. We're going to be in 1 Kings chapter 17, starting in verse 17. We're continuing on in our journey of looking at the life of Elijah, his relationship with God. And really the thing that we kind of pointed out last week is, what I love about this story is if you're one of those people that likes to predict how it ends, Elijah is one of those stories that kind of aggravates you because nothing meets the expectations that you have. Do I have anybody like that who likes to predict how it ends? I've been banned when we watch mystery movies from talking because I like to show that I'm smart and that I know how it's going to end or who the bad guy is. And so my wife will just simply tell me, no, stop talking. So now what I will do, because I still need to brag, is I'll go, I just want you to know, I already know. And I'm not going to say what I know, but I know. And then she still smacks me for that one. So what we're going to do is we're going to keep looking through Elijah. And really what I was focusing on is the key of us reversing the way that we think. And what I mean by that is what I see more and more in our modern culture in this evangelical community that we live in is I see people treating God as if he is our servant. And what I mean by that is I see people building game plans, building out dreams, having all these goals for their life, and then thinking that I will bring God in and he will help me make those things happen. And so really what we're doing when that's our relationship with God is we're saying, I'm in charge of where I'm going. God, help me get there. And so the prayer isn't so much that his will be done as it is that your will be done. And I think it's important for us to step back for a second and really ask ourselves, if that's the way we think, are we truly putting God in that role of God in our lives? Because if he is God, it should be us waking up each day going, Father, what is your will? Show me your path and help me get there. Instead of us showing up saying, hey, here's my plans. Bless those. That'd be great if you could do that. You know, help me get this promotion. Help me get this job. Help me get this raise. Help me get X, Y, or Z or whatever it is on the wish list. We have all those things that we sometimes need to focus on. And what we really need to step back and go is, God, I am just coming after you. Have you ever kind of had that singular kind of focus in your life before? I was trying to think like of the things that I've really, really pursued. And the number one problem that probably comes into my mind is my wife. When I first met her, she was actually dating somebody else. And so I asked her out a few times before I got a yes. And in fact, how I had to get a yes was I said, I know I've asked you to dinner before and you've said no. I said, but what if I just happen to be at a restaurant at, say, 6 o'clock, and you just happen to be at a restaurant at 6 o'clock, and we ran into each other and decided to get a meal together because we were both there? I said, would that be breaking the rules? And she kind of thought about it for a second, and I was like, okay, this is going to be good. And so she agreed to it, and I was really excited once she agreed to it because I knew once she went on one date with this guy, it was over after that. And it was, you know, I don't know why or how, but it worked out for me. We joke at work, me and my buddy always say in every relationship there's a reacher and a settler, and so there's one person that reaches out of their league, and there's one that settles below it. I am perfectly fine being the reacher. I'm perfectly fine with that. So think about that in your own relationship, who reached and who settled. It's an interesting conversation to have with your spouse. Men, you should claim that you're the reacher. Just let me throw that out there for you. All right. So let's go ahead and open up to 1 Kings chapter 17, and let's continue on. Now, just to recap where we were. So we get introduced to Elijah. What's the backstory on him? None. We know he's a Tishbite from Tishbe. So he's a nobody from the middle of nowhere. All right, he walks in. First thing he does is he declares war, basically, with the king of Israel. He says, it's not going to rain, and the crops aren't going to grow until I say. In fact, there won't even be dew on the ground, because this is what the Lord has said. Now, you think this is the start of an epic battle. We're going to see this great war play out. And instead, God goes to him right after that and says, go hide. And so immediately Elijah goes and hides. He hangs out at this ravine. He has ravens come and feed him. He's drinking the water from the creek. After that, God comes back to him. You think, okay, now we're going to kick into high gear. And God tells him, hey, I want you to go live with this starving widow and her son. And so that's kind of where we left him last week, is this Elijah, this man of great power, is hanging out in the middle of nowhere with a widow and her son, and we're kind of wondering, what's the game plan here? What's happening? So let's go ahead and keep reading. First Kings chapter 7, verse 17. After this, the son of the woman, the mistress of the house, became ill. And his illness was so severe that there was no breath left in him. And she said to Elijah, "What have you against me, O man of God? You have come to me to bring my sin to remembrance and to curse the death of my son." And he said to her, "Give me your son." And he took him from her arms and carried him up into the upper chamber where he lodged. And he laid him on his own bed. And he cried to the Lord, "O Lord my God, have you brought calamity even upon the widow with whom I sojourn, by killing her son?" Then he stretched himself upon the child three times and cried to the Lord, "O Lord my God, let this child's life come into him again." And the Lord listened to the voice of Elijah, and the life of the child came into him again, and he revived. And Elijah took the child and brought him down from the upper chamber into the house and delivered him to his mother. And Elijah said, "See, your son lives." And the woman said to Elijah, "Now I know that you are a man of God, and that the word of the Lord in your mouth is truth." So, a couple things here. One, what I find really, really awesome about this story, and these are kind of the things that are the intricacies that you learn when you study at a deep level, is what's really happening here, this whole war that's about to happen between God and Ahab, is really about God and this other idol called Baal. If you read the Old Testament, you'll see Baal show up many, many times. It's B-A-A-L. Now, Baal was a god of the normal people in Mesopotamia, those who did not believe in Yahweh. And he was one that we often see get adopted by the Israelites into their worship. Very big on sacrifice, blood spilt. But he is the god of rain. He is the god of life. He is the god of fertility. And as we read this story, I hope you kind of see what's happening is God is directly going at Baal. What's the first thing that he stops? The rain. And along with that, the land, which is now in famine, and that's that fertility. Second here, we see the death of this son, which again should fall under the power of who? Should fall under the power of Baal. But instead, who's going to bring life back? God is. Yahweh is. Now, brothers and sisters, we talked about this a little bit last week. We have a tendency as human beings to fluctuate between either focusing too much on God's wrath and justice and power, or we have a problem of focusing too much on His love, His compassion, and His kindness. And so what ends up happening is we have these periods in history where we either see God as this big, angry old man that nobody wants to talk to, or we see God as this big, huggable teddy bear that thinks everything's okay. And right now, we're kind of in that mode, where we think because God is love, that means everything's permissible. Do whatever you want, you can sin as much as you want, and don't worry about it, God loves you. And what we really need to see is, yes, there are extremes to His personality, but God kind of sits more there in the middle. There's times for His wrath, there's times for His love, and He picks those moments as He sees them necessary. Now, brothers and sisters, one thing I will tell you, though, is if you go throughout the Bible, the one time that you will see God get to that wrath and stay there in a place that scares you is when His people choose to worship another god. See, what I've learned about God, the more I study and learn about Him and live with Him, is that God actually gives you exactly what you ask for. It's funny, we tend to think that God won't give us what we want, but He's actually completely content to give you what you ask for. It's just one of those things where sometimes what you're asking for, you don't really understand it. Have you ever been there before? They really, really wanted something, and then you get it, and you're like, never mind. You know? I'm okay. I actually would like to go back. You watch throughout the Bible, you'll see this happen. You'll see times where Israel goes, "We want a king." And God goes, "You don't want a king." "Yes, we do. We want a king." And they go, "Here's what a king's going to do to you. We want the king." "All right." And then years later, they're praying to Him, going, "This king is ruining our lives. What's going on?" "I told you." You'll see times where He will tell Israel, "You want to make your kingdom about power and might and military force? You want to make it about who has a bigger army to decide what nation's strong? That's what you want? Yes. All right, meet the Assyrians. They have a bigger army, better weapons, and they're about to wipe you out." He gives people what they ask for. And what happens with Baal is that we will see God go, so you really think there's another God? You really truly think Baal exists? All right. If you think Baal exists, I will go to war with him, and I will show you what happens when Baal goes to war with God. And it's when we see things get ugly. Because the point he wants to make to his people is, there is no other God but me. There is no other God against me, and if any other God tries to fight me, it's not even a fight. It's a joke. And so we're seeing some slow build-up in that. Now, the question a lot of people have is, who's this build-up for? We have this man, Elijah, who obviously is in tune with God, has this amazing sense of relationship with him, and because of that relationship has an unbelievable power, right? I mean, he's doing miracles that look a lot like Jesus's, right? He's keeping food supplies going even after they should have been exhausted and run out. He's bringing people back from the dead. He clearly seems to be someone who has all this power. And where's the power being used? In one widow's house with an old lady and her son. I talked about this a little bit last week. Do you wonder if Elijah ever woke up and went like, why am I here? You know, in fact, I think this is an important thing because I think sometimes we do that. I think sometimes we look in life and go like, I'm like wasting here. My talents and abilities are just wasted in this moment where I'm at. And what we have to remind ourselves of is it's not for us to judge the value of where we are in the moment. The only thing we should care about is, am I where God wants me? And the thing that I see in the beauty of this story is it pulls me back to the awesomeness of God. God is the God of the world, and he's also the God for you. What I mean by that is he's the God that has both the big picture and the unbelievably small picture. I always love the stories of Jesus in the crowds because he'll be sitting there mobbed by people, thousands around him, and even in the midst of all these crowds, he'll still pick out one or two people that he sees are really hurting, really in trouble, really need him. And he'll make a connection. And that's just so rare. I mean, just think about our own human nature. I think I've talked about this before. Go to the mall and come back and describe to me as many people as you can. Normally, you can't describe very many because you stop seeing people as individuals and you just see a crowd. You just see this blob of people moving. And the beauty of God is even when he's sitting here, making game plans that will impact the history of the entire world, even as he's at war with Baal, even as he's trying to bring a king to his knees, he still sees that there's a widow that needs his help. And I don't know about you, but I love that. Because I look at myself, I'm not one of those people that, like, you know, I'm significant in a huge scale. You know? I mean, the older I get, the more replaceable I understand that I am. Have you ever had that moment dawn on you where you realize how replaceable you are? I remember when I took 2 weeks off from my job for when Tyler was born. And I thought I'd come back to work, and there would just be piles of work, and things would probably be out of whack, and I'd have to help the team get things back together. And I showed up, and there was a little backlog, but they were really running pretty smooth. And part of me was bummed out about that because I realized, like, man, you guys could probably fire me tomorrow and just keep churning. I mean, I think the other time this kind of hit me in life is when my grandfather died, who was somebody very significant in our lives. It just blew you away that the next day life just keeps going on. Like, you're devastated by this loss that you have, and yet the world has the audacity to just keep moving. And I think sometimes what we have to understand in that moment is whether we're big or small, however we see ourselves, it doesn't matter. God is still our God. Even though he's paying attention to everything that's happening in this entire world, he still knows the number of hairs that are on your head. That's how powerful and awesome he is. He's both big picture and small. And I know this seems like a weird thing to really hook onto, but brothers and sisters, I see so many people who think that God just doesn't care about their problems. And that's not the case. God cares about every single one of his children. And he shows that throughout his pages. All right, let's skip ahead with me a little bit. We're going to go to 18, and we're going to jump to 18:17. So let me give you the Reader's Digest version of what just happened. Yeah, that's sad. I said Reader's Digest version, and most of you probably don't even... Who actually used to read Reader's Digest? Anybody? Okay, good. The younger people are looking at me like, what is a Reader's Digest? Okay. So Reader's Digest was just like a really great magazine to read, and it would sum things up nice and sweet for you, okay? So real quick, what's happened is God finally comes to Elijah after 3 years and says it's go time. Now, what I love about the Bible is it'll just say, after 3 years, and you're like, whoa, 3 years just got put into one sentence. You know, 3 years just put into one sentence of this man's life. For 3 years, from the date that Elijah started war, he's hiding. For 3 years, he's waking up each day waiting for God to go, today's the day. Today's the day. I don't know about you, but if you've ever been in that holding pattern where you're waiting, oh my goodness, a week can feel like forever. 3 years of this goes by. Finally, God says it's time. So Elijah sets up a meeting with Ahab, the evil bad king, and here's where we're at. Verse 17, when Ahab saw Elijah, Ahab said to him, "Is it you, you troubler of Israel?" And he answered, "I have not troubled Israel, but you have in your father's house, because you have abandoned the commandments of the Lord and followed the Baals. Now therefore, send and gather all Israel to meet me at Mount Carmel, and the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah, who eat at Jezebel's table." So Asherah is the female goddess that ties into Baal. Okay? So basically, Elijah's ready now. Let's go. I've been waiting for 3 years. You've had a chance to repent. You've had a chance to figure out what's going on. You haven't changed your ways. It's game time. We're setting up the Super Bowl. It's going to be on Mount Carmel. It's going to be me against your 850 prophets. It's go time. All right? This is what he sets up. Now, I don't know about you, but do you guys like the odds of 1 versus 850? From a worldly perspective, that seems terrible. But what does Elijah know? It's actually 2 versus 850. And actually, the guy I haven't even mentioned, he's the one that's going to do all the work. He knows you can line up as many people as you want. If it goes against God, it doesn't matter. You don't have a chance. What I love about Elijah is Elijah gets past that whole concept that the Christian man is supposed to be just a nice guy. You know what I'm saying by that? We've created this vision of the Christian man as, in my opinion, being this emasculated, Mr. Rogers, nice guy, sit there, don't say anything offensive, don't be bold, don't be out there, just shake hands, smile, and hug people. If that's what you think a Christian man's going to be, read this book. Okay, these guys are bold, they're in your face, they're courageous, they put themselves out there. Okay, this man is ready to go to war for God, knowing that God's got his back. And what I like about it, he kind of talks a little bit of trash. He's a little bold about it. Any basketball players in here? No? Oh my. Okay, do I have board game players in here? There we go. Anybody a trash talker when they play board games? Yes? I know my staff is because I've played with them before, and my goodness, I sometimes have to remind them we're a church, okay? Elijah is a little bit of this kind of trash talker. So he sets up this massive meeting where we're going to see this go down. Verse 20, so Ahab sent to all the people of Israel and gathered the prophets together at Mount Carmel. And Elijah came near to all the people and said, "How long will you go limping between two different opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him, but if Baal, then follow him." And the people did not answer him a word. Brothers and sisters, that is one of the biggest messages of the entire Bible. Who are you going to follow? Who's your God? Even in our country today, where we act like we don't have idols and Baals around, we have gods. And you need to ask yourself, who is your God? Because you can't serve two. You end up loving one and hating the other. That's what the Bible tells us. Pick who your God is. And brothers and sisters, where this gets scary, your God can be things that aren't bad. Your God could be your family. Your God could be the church. Your God could be your country. Your God could be your family. It could be all these things that have good value in them. But if you put those things above God, then he is no longer your God. There is only one room at the top, and that's for him. And what Elijah's saying to the people is, you can't have it both ways. You can't have some festivals for Yahweh and then go back and serve Baal. You need to pick whose side are you on. Because this is an all or nothing kind of game. And you notice the people, they can't commit. Why? People don't like to lose. So what do? They hedge their bets. It's like down here in Texas, there's way more Rangers fans now than there was when I first moved here. Why? Because the Rangers are good now. Not now, but in the previous years, they were good, and the Astros were terrible. When I first moved here, Astros were good and Rangers were bad. So guess what I saw? Astros shirts galore. We always want to jump ship to whoever the most popular winning team is to say we're part of that. That's what these people are trying to do. And brothers and sisters, in our country, you have to ask yourself right now, are you a Christian or are you not? And you need to know on that because it's getting harder day in and day out to live by the values that God has given us. And so that's the first message he gives to these people is, who do you serve? Then Elijah said to the people, I, even I only, am left a prophet of the Lord. But Baal's prophets are 450 men. Let two bulls be given to us, and let them choose one bull for themselves, and cut it in pieces, and lay it on the wood, but put no fire to it. And I will prepare the other bull, and lay it on the wood, and put no fire to it. And you call upon the name of your God, and I will call upon the name of the Lord. And the God who answers by fire, he is God. And all the people answered, it is well spoken. So again, this is a direct attack at Baal. One of the other powers that they thought Baal had was the control of the element of fire. So basically he's saying, hey, let's have a contest. I got an altar with a cow. You got an altar with a cow. Whoever can make a flame-broiled whopper out of it, they're the winner. Okay? And you guys, this should be fair for you because your God is the God of fire. So let's see what you guys can make happen. Verse 26, and they took the bull that was given to them, and they prepared it, and called upon the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, O Baal, answer us. But there was no voice, and no one answered. And they limped around the altar that they had made. And at noon, Elijah mocked them, saying, cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he is musing, or he is relieving himself, or he's on a journey, or perhaps he is asleep and must be awakened. And they cried aloud and cut themselves after the custom with swords and lances until the blood gushed out upon them. So two things here. I love this Elijah guy. Do you see what he does at noontime? Maybe you guys need to speak up. You know, if he is a god, he could be busy. And it really goes through things. He could be sleeping. He could be eating. He might be on the can. Who knows? You know? Why don't you guys cry out loud for him? And so the Baal prophets respond. They cry out louder, and in fact they go to the next step, which is they actually start cutting themselves and spilling their own blood, a type of sacrifice to their God, hoping that he'll respond. And as midday passed, they raved on until the time of the offering of the oblation, but there was no voice. No one answered, no one paid attention. Then Elijah said to all the people, come near to me. And all the people came near to him, and he replaced the altar or repaired the altar of the Lord that had been thrown down. Elijah took 12 stones according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob to whom the word of the Lord came, saying, Israel shall be your name. And with the stones he built an altar in the name of the Lord. And he made a trench about the altar as great as would contain two seahs of seed. And he put the wood in order and cut the bull in pieces and laid it on the wood. And he said, fill four jars with water and pour it on the burnt offering and on the wood. And he said, do it a second time. And they did it a second time. And he said, do it a third time. And they did it a third time. And the water ran around the altar and filled the trench also with water. Okay, so what's our trash-talking Elijah doing now? To me, this is the equivalent, if you're watching the slam dunk competition, of when the guy puts the blindfold on. Okay? He really wants to show off. So he's going, not only am I going to beat you at this game, but I'm going to put the odds in your favor. So even though we're about to start fire, we're going to drench this thing with water to the point that the trench around it is filled with water. Okay? You guys, even if I let you have matches, wouldn't be able to start fire on this thing. He wants the point to be made known. This isn't a magic trick. It's not a gimmick. It's not a game. If this thing goes on fire, there's only one way we know it did. And it ain't me. It ain't you. It's him. I want you to pause for just a second. Does this guy have confidence in God? I mean, brothers and sisters, what's at stake here? What happens if he loses? If he loses, he's having a very fast trip off of Mount Carmel back down to the lower levels. Okay? His life is gone if he loses. And even in the midst of this, even in the midst of all of this fear that could possibly be around him, does he back down? Is he unconfident? Does he hedge his bet? No. He goes, my God's going to do this and I know it. 100%. I know it. Now, brothers and sisters, why he can be that confident is because what he's doing here is not trying to fulfill his will. He's fulfilling God's will. See, that's the difference. When you and I have our own dreams, our own goals, our own will that we're hoping God blesses, we will never have this kind of confidence because we don't know if God actually likes our plan. So even though we have this plan, we hope he'll bless it, we hope he'll be there, we don't know. Because at the end of the day, whose plan is it? It's yours. But when your life becomes about his plan, there is no doubt in you that that will be accomplished. When it's about his will, you know without a doubt, even if it seems impossible, it will come true. Because God's will won't be stopped. That's the cool thing that happens when you make this change in the way you think and pursue his will, not your own. Bear with me, I lost my spot here. And at the time of the offering of the oblation, Elijah the prophet came near and said, O Lord, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you are God in Israel, and that I am your servant, and that I have done all these things in your word. Answer me, O Lord, answer me, that this people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you have turned their hearts back. And the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust and licked up the water that was in the trench. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and said, The Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. And Elijah said to him, Seize the prophets of Baal. Let not one of them escape. And they seized them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and slaughtered them there. So what happens? Victory? I say so, right? 1 versus 850 on enemy turf. And what does Elijah make happen? He lets God's will work. And God shows himself, and he doesn't show himself lightly. He shows himself an immense force. The fire comes down, and what does it consume? Does it consume just the bowl? No, it literally burns up everything, even the dust. All of it is gone. He makes it clear to everybody watching, I am God, I did this. No one else. And what happens to the prophets of Baal? Well, they're now reserved the fate that would have been Elijah's had he lost. They die. Over 850 prophets are killed that day. Again, this is what I told you. When God goes against God, you will see his wrath. And that is his wrath playing out. Brothers and sisters, the big thing I want you to take away from this portion of the story, because we're going to stop here today, is again just the essentialness of our own lives to be aligned to the will of God. We've just become so selfish in our country. We've become so selfish and so me-centric and focused on ourselves. I mean, even marketing. Do you realize everything now has like a little I in front of it? Right? It all started by the iPhone, and then it was the iPod, and then it was the iPad, and now everybody, it's the i-whatever, the i-comfort, everything's about you. What do you want? What do you deserve? What do you think you should get? And what God tells us is that's the foolish way to go about life. Because guess what? You and I, we don't know a whole lot. We literally can't even predict what will happen in the next 30 seconds. Let alone the next 5 years. So why would we ever want to follow our own plans? Brothers and sisters, there needs to be a desire in each and every one of us to wake up in the morning and go, "Today, God, I come after you." Just like when I decided that I wanted Nicole to be my wife and I went with at her with everything I had, and I wouldn't take no for an answer and I wouldn't back off and I was just hounding her all the time. The way you pursue those kind of things, is that how you pursue God? Do you go after him like that? Or is he just a nice to have? Is he just the guy that gets your extra time or your Sunday mornings or your drive to work? Or is he the thing you have to have every single day? Is he the thing that no matter what happens in your day, no matter what obstacles come up, whether tasks come up, whatever surprises come up, nothing will stop you from getting to God? Is that the kind of drive you have for him? Because that's where we need to be. And brothers and sisters, when we go after him like that, when we chase after him with everything we've got, that's when he unlocks the mysteries of this life. That's when we experience victories like Mount Carmel, where we can be standing on a mountaintop watching the world against us, and there ain't an ounce of fear in our hearts. In fact, in a place where most of the world would be terrified, we can actually show unbelievable confidence. Because we know that this is God's will and that's all that matters. That's what happens when you stop from holding yourself back and you just jump into God. You give him it all. You give him every ounce of your being. And see, brothers and sisters, the beautiful thing is God's not asking us to do something for him that he didn't already do for us. I see people sometimes like, man, that's just a big price. Like he wants everything. He wants to be at the top. He wants my heart, my soul, my life, my material possessions, everything. And you go, well, yeah. One, he gave you it all. And two, he died for you. There's a lot of people in life who say they'll die for you. Most don't have to or ever will. This guy, before you were born, spilt his blood for you. He's already given everything he can give. It's just a matter of, will you meet him? Will you go at him with that same kind of passion, with that same kind of energy, with that same kind of desire? I'm going to leave you with one last story. Luke chapter 7, verse 36, it says, "One of the Pharisees asked him," this is Jesus, "to eat with him. And he went into the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. And behold, a woman of the city who was a sinner, when she learned that he was reclining at the table in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster flask of ointment. And standing behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears and wiped them with the hair of her head and kissed his feet and anointed them with ointment. Now when the Pharisee who had invited them saw this, he said to himself, 'If this man were a prophet, he would have known who and what sort of woman this is who's touching him, for she is a sinner.' And Jesus answering him said to him, 'Simon, I have something to say to you.' And he answered, 'Say it, teacher.' A certain moneylender had two debtors. One owed him 500 denarii and the other 50. When they could not pay, he canceled the debt of both. Now which of them will love him more?' Simon answered, 'The one, I suppose, for whom he canceled the larger debt.' And Jesus said to him, 'You have judged rightly.' Then turning toward the woman, he said to Simon, 'Do you see this woman? I entered your house, you gave me no water for my feet, but she has wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but from the time I came in, she has not ceased to kiss my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil, but she has anointed my feet with ointment. Therefore, I tell you, her sins, which are many, are forgiven, for she loved much. But he who is forgiven little, loves little.' And he said to her, 'Your sins are forgiven.'" Who are you? Are you Simon, who just wants Jesus at your house so you can say Jesus was at your house? Or are you this woman who gives everything she has to be in the presence of Jesus? She just She doesn't care if she looks stupid. She doesn't care if she's spending all of her money on him. She doesn't care what anybody else thinks or what the cost is. She just wants to be with him. That's it. She just wants to be with him. Which one are you? There are some of us who in name and in action and behavior do everything to try to make ourselves look like a Christian. But the reality is there's some of us who will stand before Jesus that day and we won't have ever met him before. When we go at him with everything we've got, the beauty is he doesn't care where you've been, what you've done, what mistakes you've made. He doesn't care how the world views you or what the world thinks of you. He only cares that you're there to be with him. There's nobody in the world that can stop you from today going after God with everything you got. So do it. Go after him. Pour every ounce of your energy into getting to his feet. And I promise you, you'll find things you never dreamt of. It's up to you, though. Only you can make that decision. I pray that in your heart you will have the desire to do so. Let's go to the Lord in prayer.